You can give a person a fish and you feed them for a day, or you can teach a person how to fish and you can feed them for the rest of their lives. If the child is arguing with their parent as far as what it is they want, they now have one more argument with the Xbox that they don't have with Nintendo and PlayStation.
That's Rob Enderle, a personal technology analyst based in San Jose, talking about today's news. Microsoft is releasing consumer-level tools for video game developers. This is PodTech News. It's Monday, August 14th. I'm Catherine Giraudeau. Microsoft's XNA Game Studio Express will allow consumers to develop video games for Windows and the company's Xbox 360 gaming console for free. Well, almost. To test, share, and play the games, users will pay a $99 annual subscription fee to join the Creators Club. The release is aimed at avid amateur gamers, hobbyists, students, and independent game developers. In the era of user-generated content, this seems likely to take off, and take off big. And Microsoft wants to push its Xbox 360 Live online gaming service. But what does the release of the XNA Game Studio Express mean for the competition? And what do amateur developers stand to gain from making games for free? I had a few questions, so naturally, I went to ask a gaming industry analyst. Rob Enderle is principal analyst with the Enderle Group, a company he founded 3 years ago to focus on the future of personal technology, the companies who build it, and the users who consume it. I recorded Rob at his very wired home office in San Jose, California.
I'm the principal analyst of the Enderle Group, primarily covering emerging technology and personal technology, so emerging personal technology, if you would.
Now, Rob doesn't only analyze the gaming industry, he's also an active participant.
Yeah, I've got both the original Xbox, the Xbox 360, and the Xbox 360 developer platform here in-house, and I've got a number of PC gaming platforms that are set up, and yes, I do, I play a lot.
I asked Rob to tell me exactly what XNA Game Studio is.
It's kind of like a combination of GarageBand that came out of Apple and then maybe YouTube rolled over and then targeted at the gaming community. So it's as I say, it's a combination of a tool for amateurs to develop games as well as a model to help them develop the skills that they need and develop the relationship and channels they need to be profitable and successful. Typically, to develop a game, it's awful hard to enter for under $500,000, and you really don't get much until you start entering into about seven figures, it's $1 million, $2 million. So it's the entry cost is incredibly high for a game developer.
And you had mentioned that this could be a vehicle for amateur gamers to create commercially viable products.
Absolutely.
How would that model work?
In many ways, this takes the traditional game player and makes them more of a productive member of the development family. So even if somebody doesn't actually release a game on the platform, it kind of overcomes the language barrier that typically exists between a developer and a gamer. If one's going to try to communicate with the other, it turns that game player into somebody that can actually, as I say, kind of speak the developer's language.
And I would think there'd be big advantages for professional game developers to have this type of feedback coming from really savvy gamers.
Oh, it could be huge. As we mentioned earlier, the cost of a game can easily run into the millions of dollars, and some have run close to hundreds of millions. So very similar to the cost of bringing out a fairly expensive movie. And the more that you can do to assure that the end result is going to be successful, the better off you're going to be, because clearly you don't want a multi-million dollar product come to market then suddenly discover that nobody wants to play it. This helps mitigate that.
Now, what would the model be for an amateur developer on this platform? What would the conduit be? Do you think Microsoft is going to be interested in licensing some of these games for its Live platform?
Could be. Right now, when Live was set up, it was actually set up with the idea that people would be able to sell stuff through it, third parties. Initially, those third parties were selling through things like special costume colors, special car colors, enhancements to existing games. This particular enhancement allows that model to carry forward into the absolute games, actual games itself, but designed within Xbox Live was this underlying concept of being able to generate revenue.
And what do you think is the most interesting thing about overall about this announcement?
Well, probably the most interesting is the long-term impact on software itself. The core portion of this is the idea that the software package has very little value and therefore is provided for free. It is the online service, this collaborative environment that carries the value and has the money associated with it. So in many ways, this may very well be the future of software. Software provided as a service, and by the nature of that service, is pretty much made pirate-proof. Right now, with regard to software, in fact, most types of media, the problems that we're running into in terms of usability, in terms of good customer experience, almost all hover around DRM, which is digital rights management, which is the stuff that keeps you from doing what it is you want to do with the product. By moving to a model like this, you don't really care who gets the software product because it's the service that provides the value. It's that extra thing that you really can't copy and pirate. And so instead of being frustrated with DRM and the ability to do stuff, you can take DRM out of the product, let people do whatever they want to do with the software, and they're going to get their value wherever they are and whatever system they are on through the service that's provided. So it's a way of decoupling the money from a technology. I used to call it, I still do call it, the three most horrible words, letters in technology, DRM. Decoupling the two of them, building a more positive customer experience on one hand and a much more secure experience for the software developer. And so making them both happy is one of those perfect storm things that if it works right, we don't get often.
Now, Microsoft isn't the first game developing company to release such a product for amateurs. Sony tried to do it and famously failed.
Sony, and this is kind of interesting, it probably showcases the strengths and weaknesses of both firms. Microsoft, at the end of the day, is a tools company. They started off as a tools company. They had tools long before they had the operating system business, and everything was kind of built upon that tool structure. So they have the greatest expertise in building tools, so you would think they would be good at this. Sony, on the other hand, has always been known for having horrible tools, absolutely horrible tools, even for the professional side. So for them, the gap was much broader between what their skill set was and the product that they wanted to develop.
And let's go back and say that product was called NetEuros. Is that how you pronounce that?
You remembered it. I actually didn't remember they'd brought that product out. It was pretty much a dismal failure. It never really got any traction. But even right now, developing for the PlayStation 3 with their current generation of professional tools, they're not getting much traction. It is evidently, even though the platform itself is attractive, from what I understand it, the tools are horrid. I mean, just incredibly difficult to use.
So what do you think are the pitfalls Microsoft could avoid by learning from Sony's failed experiment with NetEuros?
Well, by taking what is a core skill, which was tools, as opposed to one that was not a skill at all for Sony. I mean, Sony's skill is really in packaging and marketing consumer products. Development tools wasn't their strength. And so by focusing on a core skill and bringing out a product that's close to the core skill and focusing heavily not only on ease of use, but on building a collaborative structure where other people, more experienced people, could help the novices get through the initial experience, that's what really makes the difference here. And I think to a large extent, they've learned not only from Sony's experience, but other past experiences that they've had in trying to get novices excited and moving through an ecosystem.
Do you know how big the potential market for this product is?
Well, the number of gamers that currently exist in the market rank in the tens of millions. I mean, a given game like World of Warcraft, I think, has 12 million users. So it's that's just one game. So you've got a large number of potential participants in this. Now, granted, the majority of gamers probably don't want to develop their own game. So we're talking about a subset, but it's clearly millions. I mean, it's probably not a small number of millions in terms of people that might be interested if it's the right product and provides the right experience.
Do you think that this could be presenting competition for the console games to be coming out in November from Sony and Nintendo?
That's probably where the competitive pressure will be applied, because now you've got a choice of buying into a console ecosystem on one hand, where you're just buying games, and if you're a parent, you're certainly thinking about this. and certainly spending money on an ongoing basis, or another council system where your kid could actually learn something that could be beneficial, something that could generate revenue that might actually pay for more than just the council system and the games. And what it does is create a competitive advantage for the Xbox itself, because as they say, as a child, you can go to your parents and say, you know, help me get the Xbox, I can learn to program, might develop a career, hey, and if I do it really well, I can, dad, mom, I'm able to make enough money to actually buy the games I want, you won't have to give me any more money. That's an argument that you really don't have with the PlayStation 3 or the Nintendo. And as they say, if given the number of gamers we've got that are out there, if you created, you know, a really nice casual game, you know, you sell a million of them and you make a buck each. I mean, it's a lot of money real fast. And you've got to figure there will at least be one, two, or three folks that'll do that. May not be 100 folks, but somewhere between 300 and 100 will probably make some good money doing this, and probably a lot better than a lottery ticket in terms of return.
That was a conversation with Rob Enderle, principal analyst with the Enderle Group. Given that we were surrounded by video game consoles in every room of Rob's home office, I asked him if he ever snuck in a few minutes of gameplay during work hours.
I don't play until after 5. Otherwise, you're right, I probably would. And there have been a couple weekends where I've started at, you know, 6 o'clock in the morning, and then my wife sees me again at 12 midnight Sunday night. So it's been that kind of an experience. So yeah, this can be very addictive.
Why don't you tell me, Rob, what game you're playing here and what we're hearing?
I'm playing City of Heroes. And I'm killing bad guys.
This is PodTech News.